Welcome back to Is It Horror? This is Season 2, Episode 6, Halloween Ends Review.
I'm Joe.
I was confused that Brianna's not here, but I'm Matt.
I'm Mitch.
And I am Steve. As Matt already mentioned, Brianna will not be joining us, unfortunately, this week, but hopefully she will be back for our next episode, and she will, of course, be missed. Bye, Brianna. If you haven't joined us before, each episode we analyze a piece of media, usually a movie, whose horror status is debatable. We look at the creator's intent, audience reception, and the content of the media, all in an effort to better define the horror genre. If you agree with our take, awesome. If you don't, that's awesome too. Horror is a diverse genre, and all are welcome. This episode will be a little bit different, though, even than that, because we are reviewing something that we're sure is horror, rather than debating whether it is horror. And so this is one of the episodes that we playfully, since Matt coined the phrase a while ago, would call Is It Horrible? As opposed to Is It Horror? So we're going to take a look at Halloween Ends and decide if it is horrible. So we'll let you know what we think. But before we do that, we're going to go to Joe's Get to Know You Corner. Joe?
All right. Well, so as stated, we're talking about Halloween. One of the things that I noticed, or I think we probably have all noticed about Michael and other slashers, is just how much damage they're able to take. And, you know, it's just ridiculous on some levels. So that got me thinking and wondering what's everybody's, like, what's the most physical damage you've ever endured? I guess now I'm thrown off too because Brianna's not here. Sad times. I guess I'll start us off. I had a couple that I could think of. I've honestly been fairly lucky in that sense. I've never broken any bones or anything like that. But a couple of things that I could think of were one time when I was a wee child, I was being babysat by my older sister, and we were goofing around in the kitchen and just like play wrestling and things like that. And she like took a swing at my head, and I deftly dodged it, but also deftly smashed my face on the edge of the counter. And so I had this giant cut right above my eyebrow, that it was one of those, like, you know, she was babysitting me and was freaking out and like, "You're fine, you're fine." I was like,
"Don't tell mom and dad."
Well, right, exactly. And I ended up having to get stitches and stuff like that. And you can still kind of see the scar there if you look for it. So that was one of my bigger ones. And then another one I think I've mentioned actually before, when we talked about Texas Chainsaw Massacre, was I cut my leg with a chainsaw one time when I was a teenager. It wasn't real bad, but I've got a pretty good scar across my one thigh. Those are the two that I could think of.
Okay, so for me, I really have not had many bad things happen to me. I've never broken a bone, but I have had stitches. So what I thought to say for this was that I've had stitches 3 separate times in my head. Which, if you know me, things are starting to make some sense.
Oh yeah.
Was that the Kool-Aid man? Oh yeah.
Oh no.
Oh no. when I was like a toddler, I guess I ran into a piano and had to get, I actually don't know if I had to get stitches. I know I have a scar. I imagine that I got stitches.
I think you got stitches on that one. I remember I watched you trip and fall into the piano, but yeah, I'm pretty sure you got stitches on that one. Yeah. But you had another stitch incident in the head later at our church too. So
yeah, I had that. The first one was I tripped and hit my head on the piano, which is kind of a joke because I play the piano. So people thought that was kind of like a weird origin story, even though I'm not like super into piano, even though I do play it. And then the next one was that I was playing a game called Ghosts in the Graveyard. I don't know if that's a game that everyone plays or if it was just to our church.
definitely familiar to me.
Okay, well, you also grew up in our church.
It's a classic.
Okay, well, you know it too. Then. Okay, good. So yeah, yeah. So I ran into, like, if anybody knows, we grew up like kind of in the Mormon church, and they have like these big, giant metal dividers to divide like their multi-purpose rooms. And I just ran slam into one of those, playing Ghosts in the Graveyard with my eyes closed, and had to get stitches for that.
Oh, man.
And it was actually like right near where I had the stitches from playing the piano. And then the third one was I was involved in a pillow fight at our home, in which a friend of my brother's accidentally whacked me really hard with a pillow into a bunk bed. And I had to get stitches in the back of my head. So, yeah, I've had stitches in three different places in my head, and I am still ready and raring to go and stab Laurie Strode, just like Michael Myers.
I've never broken a bone or got stitches, so my story's kind of just sad and pathetic. But the worst pain I have ever, the most excruciating pain I've ever felt was when I had sciatica, if anyone's familiar with that. It's basically when your sciatic nerve in your back gets pinched because, like, I don't even know why it happens, but I guess pressure from plates in your back pinched this nerve. And it happened because I had gone to a wedding, and I'm a very violent dancer. I'm a very enthusiastic dancer. So I guess the pressure of jumping up and down and flailing around pinched my nerve, and when I woke up, I literally could not walk. And I'm like, I hope, I would not wish this pain upon anybody, because it was insanely painful. Like, I'm talking screaming and crying as a 24-year-old woman, like, Mom, I can't walk. So I ended up laying in the, I tried to go to the bathroom, but I couldn't make it, so I ended up laying in the hallway between my bedroom and the bathroom for pretty much the whole day. And the only way I got up was because my mom gave me a bunch of muscle relaxers, and I finally could walk again. So just be careful when you're, I guess, dancing. I've had a lot of dancing injuries. You'd be surprised.
You know, that dance isn't as safe as they said.
No, it's not the safety dance.
Okay, well, you know, I had one that I thought of going into this, but now I have a second one because you mentioned all the back troubles. The worst visible injury I've ever had was also a head trauma, because apparently that is what the boys in our family do. I was at a family get-together, and one of my cousins was supposed to gather everybody up because we were about to eat. And so they were all playing basketball, and there was some other sports equipment out. So this particular cousin, he grabbed a baseball bat, and he was jokingly, like, swinging it on the edge of the court, like, if you guys don't come to eat, I'm going to get you. And I, you know, I liked that cousin, so I wandered up behind him. I think, I don't know, it was maybe 8 to 10 years old. I wandered up behind him. He swung backwards and hit me full in the face with a baseball bat right in the forehead. I don't remember being hit. I remember walking up to him, and I remember being on the ground, and I wasn't really clear on what was happening, but everyone around me was freaking out. And so they did probably the worst thing that they could do in that moment, which was take me into the bathroom so I can look in the mirror. And to me, as an eight to 10 year old, I forget exactly how old, but however old I was, I looked in the mirror and I saw the huge dent in my head and was like, I'm dead. That's it. I'm dead.
Oh, no.
It was, and then they took me to get stitches and everything got fixed up and it was fine. And there wasn't really any, you know, permanent physical damage other than a scar on my forehead. Of course, I'm emotionally damaged and completely wrecked, so that's obvious. But so sure. That's the worst visible injury that I've ever had. But the worst pain I've ever had was also a back issue where I don't, because here's the fun thing for those of you who may not be in your 30s or in your 40s yet. Sometimes you can hurt yourself terribly by sitting wrong or just standing up wrong, or you just wake up one morning and your leg or your back's like, I'm going to hurt all week. So enjoy that. So I happened to just stand up wrong, and I suppose this was building over time in the background, but I had excruciating back pain. And then I was like, well, I'll lay down, that'll take care of it. So I lay down for a bit, and it got worse. And I too spent some time lying on the floor in the hallway of the apartment that I was in, and on the bathroom floor, and basically lying down in one spot because I couldn't move at all to any place one way or the other without it hurting just horribly. As a grown man in my 30s, I was laying there crying because of how just horribly, ridiculously painful it was, until I could get a chiropractor to come and visit and work some of the muscles out and just move around more. And then suddenly that kind of disseminated it, and it wasn't as bad. But yeah, it was awful. So awful.
Yeah, back pain sucks.
So much, yeah. I've said the exact same thing you said at one point. I wouldn't wish this on my worst enemy. It was so awful.
I mean, how old's Michael in these things? Like, he's got to have some back pain. Like,
truly. I don't know. He's in the best physical shape I've ever seen an old man be.
Apparently.
Right. Anyways, well, thanks for joining us on In the Corner. I guess we'll carry on with the episode.
We're talking about Halloween Ends, and that was directed by David Gordon Green. He has worked on Pineapple Express, Manglehorn. He's working on the upcoming Exorcist reboot or requel. I'm not clear on that. And he also co-wrote this movie with Danny McBride. They were college friends, and so they've done a lot of collaborating together, done a lot of TV together. They did Eastbound and Down, Vice Principals, The Righteous Gemstones. So they're constant collaborators. I haven't seen most of those things. I've seen Vice Principals, but it was, I thought it was going to be like the standard comedy, and it went all over the place, and it was kind of amazing, really. I don't know. I definitely would recommend that one. The writer credit on this one, we've got Paul Brad Logan. I mentioned Manglehorn as a movie that was directed by David Gordon Green already. That was written by David Brad Logan. It's kind of a drama, romantic comedy, from what I understand, that stars Al Pacino. Paul Brad Logan also wrote the novelization of Halloween Ends, which felt was relevant because I decided to read at least some of it, as much as I could get through before this podcast. It was a real late in the game decision for me. And then it was also written by Chris Brunet. I think that's how you say it. But he wrote for the some segments for The House, a Hulu Halloween anthology. So yeah, it had four writers. David Gordon Green and Danny McBride have written for both Halloween and Halloween Kills. And they did have some additional writers on those movies as well, although neither Paul Brad Logan or Chris Brunet worked on the other two films. So as far as the back of the box description, this is a little bit different because I'm kind of at least giving a description of the full roundup of the other movies, which is just to say that after 40 years in an institute for the criminally insane, one fateful Halloween night, Michael Myers escapes and continues slashing his way through Haddonfield. But unbeknownst to him, for 40 years, Laurie Strode has spent every day preparing for this night. And then for this particular film, it is 4 years after the events of Halloween Kills. Michael is at large, and no one knows exactly where he is, and people are trying to move on with their lives. Big spoiler warning. At this point, just expect there to be spoilers for any Halloween film as game to talk about. If you haven't seen all of them, then enter at your own risk. We're going to focus on the David Gordon Green trilogy of Halloween 2018, Halloween Kills and Halloween Ends. But yeah, it's all fair game, so be warned. So that I don't continue talking up a storm, I figured we would at least hear a little bit of some of the comments we have from the directors about this film. So I was going to see if I could maybe get somebody to read the first David Gordon Green quote we have under the intent section. It's from a MovieMaker.com interview where he's talking about this film and his concepts for it.
I'll do it. Okay, so David Gordon Green says, we had to decide how we wanted to wrap up these characters. How do we want to make it not just a nice, neat bow on a franchise? Honestly, we never once considered making a Laurie and Michael movie. The concept that it should be a final showdown-type brawl never even crossed our minds. I wanted to see where it would go. I wanted one to win, one to die. But we were always more ambitious with that. So how did we want to go out? By doing what no one except us would do. Make a love story. It's our version of going out with a bang and opening our hearts to this community and these characters.
All right, and then the next one is kind of, again, talking about his approach to this. If I could have somebody read the next one, too.
All right, so David Gordon Green also said, it's funny when someone says, build your dream house on this real estate using this title and these characters. Everybody is going to find a different little thing that's meaningful for them, and they'll make it their own. That's what I did. For every bite of backlash, you also get people that are thanking you for taking it for taking it to a new place and keeping it alive and full of love.
And then, okay, I have a couple other things that I was going to look at, which is basically a quote from John Carpenter where he's talking about his view on Halloween Ends. I'll just, before we have that one read, and I'll have Mitz read that one, but it's kind of funny, if you've ever seen any interviews with John Carpenter, he's the most down-to-earth kind of blue-collar mentality director that you could ever think of. I really love how he's just like, I don't know, I don't care, I just kind of did it for the money, I'll do it if they pay me. And it's funny to think that he's made like all of these classic films that people love so much, and I just love his films so much too. And I just love hearing those interviews where it's not like, well, I was going for this artistic integrity and I had these ideas and I'd read this idea from this long ago text. It's nothing like that. It's just like, I don't know, I thought this would be good and it was fun. Yeah, I did that, and oh yeah, I'm glad they keep making Halloween movies, then they send me checks and I get to sit at home and do nothing and just collect the money.
Yeah,
and it's just great. But anyway, okay, Mitz, take it away.
Do you want to role play with me in this conversation?
I absolutely do. Do you want to? I'll be the interviewer. You be John Carpenter.
Okay. Gosh, this is the best day of my life.
What do you think of Halloween Ends?
It was good. I enjoyed it. It's very different. I enjoyed the risks that it took. Jamie was just extraordinary in it. She's just wonderful. I'm so proud of her.
Is this trilogy how you imagine Laurie and Michael's life going?
Believe me, I didn't imagine anything. My movie ended in 1978. Years ago, that was it. Halloween 2, which I had a hand in writing, it wasn't something I really cared about. My movie's over. And this is totally new ground, so it wasn't about me imagining anything.
So yeah, anyway, it's funny because, yeah, again, it just seems like it was kind of just a paycheck to him.
Yeah, it's just like, yeah, I don't care.
I don't associate with this. It's just This is, what do they call it? I don't know. Never mind. It's fan fiction. That's what I was thinking.
I mean, yeah. It kind of is, right?
To him, yeah.
It reminds me of Harrison Ford a little bit. Harrison Ford's always the same way in his interviews. People are like, would you ever make a new Star Wars movie? Or would you ever make a new Blade Runner? And he's like, if they pay me, I don't care. As long as I get paid.
Right.
Yeah.
I'll do it for money.
I ain't working for free either, so I feel you, Harrison.
And then the last one's actually an interview from Halloween 2018's press junket from Collider. And they had asked at that time, did they have the trilogy planned? And Danny McBride, he had said, we definitely thought about it in a bigger picture of where we would go if we had more. But I think we were both of the mindset of like, let's just see if we don't like blow it with this one and not get ahead of ourselves, create a whole universe, and then no one likes it. And then David Gordon Green replied right after that, there was a point we were talking about doing two at one time and thinking, wouldn't it be ambitious? And then, yeah, we got a little scared of trying to get it, you know, didn't want to get ahead of ourselves. So I was trying to pick out exactly when they had the idea to have it be a trilogy of films. I know that there's another interview that I don't have the quote from where Jamie Lee Curtis is talking, and she was talking about doing sound in post-production for Halloween 2018. And at that point, she said that David Gordon Green had pulled her aside, basically told her what the plots of Halloween Kills and Halloween Ends would be. So there's at least some report that once the movie was at least in post-production, that maybe they had a concept of what was coming next. Going into at least a couple more things before we start really getting into it is the reception I thought would be interesting to take a look at. Halloween, so I'm pulling this from Rotten Tomatoes, and if anyone who knows Rotten Tomatoes, it's an aggregate of critic scores, and it's not a perfect science by any means. Basically, a critic could give it 2.5 out of 5 stars, but it counts as good or bad as far as Rotten Tomatoes aggregating it. So the percentage only means that the critic was willing to veer the review positively when it was all said and done, but doesn't really take into account how positive, how negative they were, all of that. If you follow Rotten Tomatoes, you already know all this, but I thought it's worth mentioning before saying what the numbers are. So the original Halloween had 96% from critics and audience at 89%. Halloween 2018 had 79% from critics and 71% from audience. Halloween Kills dipped down to 38% from critics, with audience still at 66%. And then Halloween Ends went up a little bit, but not as high as the two other Halloween films, which is to 41% by critics, and then audiences dipped down a little bit to 57%, which that all doesn't sound good. But at the same time, if you happen to look at, say, the critical reception for like Halloween 5 and 6 and Resurrection and, you know, both Rob Zombie movies, you start seeing this pattern where they're not actually that bad off as far as reception for Halloween movies overall. They're actually above the curve when you start taking those movies into account. So there's that. And then one last thing worth mentioning. Again, if you're here because you have seen Halloween Ends and you're very excited about the Halloween franchise, this is probably not news to you. But I figured it would be worth saying for at least some people who aren't as well versed in it, is that the Halloween franchise has 13 films, and at present, there are 5 separate timelines. So to just reiterate what those timelines are and where we are at on those timelines, I figured I'd go over what each was. The first one I'm calling the Thorn timeline, which is basically how it originally came out for the most part. It's Halloween 1978, Halloween 2, 1981, and then we skip to Halloween 4, The Return of Michael Myers, Halloween 5, The Revenge of Michael Myers, and Halloween, The Curse of Michael Myers. The Thorn timeline, at least I'm calling it that because 4, 5, and 6 deal with the Curse of Thorn, which is a sort of explanation for what was going on with Michael. Then there's the H2O timeline, which is, again, Halloween 1978, Halloween 2, 1981, and then you skip 20 years ahead to Halloween H2O 20 years later, and then Halloween Resurrection. Then the next timeline is the Rob Zombie timeline, which is Halloween 2007 and Halloween 2, 2009. Then you have the anthology timeline, which is just Halloween 3, Season of the Witch. And then finally, this timeline that we're talking about, the David Gordon Green timeline, which is Halloween 1978, Halloween 2018, Halloween Kills, and Halloween Ends. It's worth mentioning because you get a reboot on average about every 2 movies in this franchise of 13 films, because you get a reboot after Halloween 2, so you get a reboot after Halloween 3, you get a reboot after Halloween 6, then you get a reboot after Halloween Resurrection, reboot after Rob Zombie's Halloween 2, and then I'm sure that there will be a reboot now after Halloween Ends. So it's kind of this strange 13 film series that you can only follow up to 5 movies in one narrative thread. So, anyway, all that background out of the way, where do we stand? Is it horrible?
Are we talking just Ends at this point, or like the whole timeline, or this particular timeline?
Let's go with both. How do you feel about this particular film? How do you feel about David Gordon Green's trilogy of films?
Okay, well, for me, Halloween Ends, I guess we'll start there. It was a little rough for me. I didn't end up liking it that much. It was it's hard because like it was really good production and like a lot of quality acting and a lot of stuff, but I just had a hard time with the story and a hard time with where they chose to like put their focus. So I didn't end up liking Ends very much. As far as the whole trilogy goes, I really liked Halloween 2018. I thought it was a really good movie. I had, you know, a few little things about it, but overall I really loved it. It's one of my favorite requels, I guess. And then Halloween Kills, I guess I was kind of on a similar page that I was with Halloween Ends, as I just struggled with it a bit. But we'll get into that more, I'm sure.
Okay, so I really like Halloween 2018. I think that's a really great movie and a great follow-up to the original Halloween 1978, a good way to kind of reset the timeline. Halloween Kills, I don't think was a great movie overall, but in the scope of like slasher films and especially Halloween films, I do think Halloween Kills has a lot of the elements of what I like to see in a Michael Myers centered movie. And I don't think it was necessarily any cheesier than the original Halloween or Halloween 2. When you look at them as like a whole picture, Halloween Ends, I just feel like it's just not a Halloween movie. It's a horror movie that has Michael Myers and Laurie Strode in it, or at least versions of them, and that's what it is. And so as a Halloween film, I think it pretty much completely drops the ball. As a horror film, it does have some value to it. So that's where I'm at.
I have a lot to say about Halloween Ends. But I'll save it for the rest of the podcast. I'm just going to answer the question. Is it horrible? Is it horrible? No. That's my answer.
Fair enough.
I will elaborate later.
Okay. I think I stand with Joe and Matt similarly as far as the trilogy of films goes, that Halloween 2018 is a personal favorite for me, maybe in the running for my second favorite Halloween film after the original. Then Halloween Kills drops down dramatically for me. I don't think Halloween Kills is a terrible film or anything. It just felt a little bit disjointed. It made sense, some of the choices that they were making, but it just didn't really work for me as well. And then Halloween Ends, I think similarly to Matt and similarly to Joe was saying is that I think that it's maybe a good horror film, but it's not a good Halloween film, is I guess what it comes down to me for me. But yeah, we'll get into all of those details. And I guess before we start talking about what it is, I wanted to see. I wouldn't say it's horrible. I guess that's going back to that question. I don't think it's horrible. I've seen worse Halloween films. So it's definitely not the worst Halloween film that I've ever sat through. See my tirade in other ones about Halloween Resurrection and drop kicking Busta Rhymes. But anyhow, before even starting the film, what were you hoping to see? What was kind of like your checklist of must-haves for Halloween Ends?
I didn't have a lot of like specific expectations going into it, just because coming off of Halloween Kills, I was kind of let down by the trajectory of the series. So I was kind of like, well, I guess we'll kind of see where they go with this. And that's what I ended up feeling like afterwards anyways. But like I expected to see a conclusion of some sort, and whether that was as far as I've expected one or both of Laurie and Michael to be killed. And we were having this conversation beforehand. Steve asked me ahead of time. And I was like, I was a little frustrated by like how much damage Michael was taking. And kind of like in the first one, it felt like they were going for a little more realism. But then in the second one, like it just got a little ridiculous on the damage thing. And it's like, I don't know what they'll do with him. I guess maybe throw him in a meat grinder. And then they did. And I was vindicated or something. I don't know. But anyways, I guess I didn't, other than those things, I didn't have a lot of expectations going in myself.
It was really just hilarious to me when Joe was like, oh, pretty much have to like throw him in a meat grinder. I was like, oh my God, I can't say anything because I'd already seen it at that point.
I guess my expectations for it overall, I definitely wasn't expecting what we did see. I kind of was hoping that this was going to pick up on the same night that Halloween Kills ended, and I was hoping to see like Michael sort of like, maybe Michael is like ripping through her family, like everybody that she's got left, or I don't know. I just felt like I was hoping for something more along those lines, and what we ended up getting was this weird kind of love story, two-parter sort of thing that was not actually really involving Michael Myers that much, and the version of Michael Myers that we did get was like, hey, I'm Michael Myers, and for some reason I'm like training this kid to like take my place, and like this kid goes in and I don't kill him, and it's just like so weird. It was just like, I don't know. I was expecting to see Michael Myers. I wasn't expecting to see this like version of him that's like hiding in the sewers like a and biding his time, lying in wait. it was so weird. It's just very weird. I think the whole premise that this was gonna
Miyagi.
Yeah, I think the whole premise that this was supposed to happen like 4 years after the events of Halloween Kills just sort of made it weird and ruined it because yeah, like why was he waiting for 4 years? He was like rebooting, he was having a system reboot in the sewers all that time. It's just so weird. So yeah, I know that was kind of rambling, but yeah, that's not at all what I expected. I don't really like the direction that they took with it. I think if you completely removed Michael Myers and Laurie Strode's story out of it and just had this story about Corey and him kind of taking revenge on the town that turned their back on him, that I think it could have been an interesting movie. But trying to like shoehorn that story into a Halloween movie didn't make any sense to me.
Yeah. So expectations? I only went into the movie with one expectation, but I had a few more evolve while I was watching it. So the one that I went in with was, of course, if this is truly Halloween Ends, then Michael has to die. That was the only expectation I had, or I guess wish list. And then as I was watching it, I realized if I were directing and writing the movie, which I am not, and I'm not, probably will be terrible at it, but if it were my movie, I definitely also would have wanted Laurie to die. Because I feel like Laurie's whole story is Michael. Michael is her story. And with no Michael, there's really no more Laurie Strode. Which maybe is a controversial statement. But I think it would have been very poetic for them both to die. Especially in the scene at the end when they're in the kitchen together. I really thought they were both going to die, and I would have liked that ending, but that is not what we got. And then the third expectation that evolved while I was watching the movie, or wish, was that it would be a segue or like an origin story for a completely new horror franchise. And if you've seen the movie, you know what I'm talking about. like a completely new horror villain, but it didn't happen that way either, which was totally a waste because you could have totally started this whole new franchise with this. We already know his origin story. He's got a mask of a scarecrow. It's perfect. You could have thrown him at the slammer into the slammer at the end of the movie, and he could have been the new Michael Myers. But they could have called him something else. But no, they didn't do that. They had him stab himself in the neck. Terrible, terrible choice. I would make I would make a much better director.
Yeah. I think, at least for me anyway, my expectations are kind of similar to what everyone else said. Is I figured that, you know, Halloween Ends, Michael's either going to die or Laurie's going to die or both. I assumed that most likely Michael would die and that maybe Laurie would go with him. I guess I was expecting it to be something similar to like Halloween 2018, but on steroids, you know, like it's still the knockdown, drag out fight between Laurie and Michael, but that maybe it's a longer thing. Maybe there's more of a chase. I don't know. The problem that I think that you had, at least, maybe not a problem, but at least the concept that's a little bit of a problem introduced in the original 2018 Halloween, is going with the idea that they're still not related, Laurie and Michael. So you have to kind of keep figuring out reasons for them to encounter each other. And in 2018, it worked because you had the crazy doctor and a couple of people were basically like aching for that matchup to happen as much as the audience is. And then it makes sense in Halloween Kills that he's not coming after because he doesn't give a shit about Laurie. And so then you basically come back to Halloween Ends where you have to again have somebody else intercede to bring them together, because otherwise, why would they? If Laurie's given up on hunting Michael, which I guess... this is out of my expectation side of it, because now I'm actually, you know, having seen it. But anyway, just to say, like, if she's trying to move on, then she's not going to go hunting him and he doesn't care about her. So you just have to get them in the same room together outside of either of their wishes again. Anyhow, but the point being that, yeah, I was expecting one or both to die, and I was expecting Halloween 2018, but on steroids even further. Like everyone else said, I wasn't expecting what we got here at all, which is basically an attempt to, you know, for at least the second time, to kind of push Halloween into an anthology territory. Were you guys, I mean, we've already kind of got the answer, but were you satisfied with the conclusion of this film? If this is the last Halloween film ever made, would you feel like it was a fitting conclusion?
I guess for me, I would have been happier with the conclusion if it ended after Halloween 18 or 2018. I was excited to have there be more movies, but in retrospect, I think that was a better ending, and it left just a little bit of a cliffhanger, which I think is a good way to leave it off. But, you know, if you had to have more, like, I think it was a fine way to end, to have like the kitchen scene and then like Michael getting thrown in the meat grinder. Like, I guess I'm fine with that overall. But I would have been happier with something a little more akin to the end of 2018.
Satisfied is a weird way to put it. I'm not like in denial about the ending. It just could have been done better. Like, I'm willing to accept it, but at the same time, there's a part of me that's just going to pretend like this trilogy never happened and the only true Halloween film was the first. So, I don't know.
I think what I wanted was for Halloween to end the way that Halloween 2018 ended. And I think that maybe it should have just ended with that movie. Because that's what I wanted. I wanted to have this knockdown, drag out fight between Laurie and Michael, where Laurie gets the best of him and definitively ends him. And that's what I wanted to see, and that's what I got in 2018. So I think that maybe I'll just forget that these other films happened. Although Halloween Kills does have some interesting moments that I thought are at least noteworthy kills or moments in the whole Halloween franchise.
I just think that the quote from David Gordon Green that I had us kind of read at the beginning is very telling, with the idea that he never really considered for this film having a final showdown really between Laurie and Michael. Like, that wasn't really his intent. And from a certain perspective, I can understand that he feels like he had done that already, because he did do it already. And I get that it's probably hard to try and figure out a way to do that again and still have it feel fresh. But if you don't feel up to that, then maybe you don't make the movie, I guess, is kind of where I'm at. And if you didn't want to make a Halloween movie, then maybe you just go make another movie. I feel like those maybe were viable options as opposed to doing it the way that it was done. It seems like to me that, and I was talking with Joe about this before the show, because sometimes we kind of like pregame a little bit to iron our thoughts out. But one of the things I think is interesting about the Halloween franchise is that basically rebooting on average about every two films. And I think that you get the situation where Michael is supposed to be pure evil, so there's not any character development to explore with him. And it's like every writer gets a little bit bored with him and can't think what to do, because John Carpenter clearly didn't really care about doing Halloween 2. He said as much. And then he wanted to do an anthology. So that's why he did Halloween 3, Season of the Witch, but then that kind of didn't work out. And then they make 4, 5, and 6, but even by the point you're getting to 6, they sort of like 5 and 6 with the introduction of the Cult of Thorn, and it, like, oh, there's this cult behind it, and Michael's kind of their puppet, and things like that. It was clear that they were kind of getting bored with the concept too, because those movies, especially 6, don't focus as much on him. And then Rob Zombie makes his two films, and by the second movie, it's like, the real villain of Halloween 2 of Rob Zombie's is like PTSD. They're all kind of, Loomis and Laurie and Michael are all dealing with the aftermath of that. And there's not as much of that Michael Myers action as you would think. So it's kind of like everyone's sort of like, this is a pure evil character. There's nothing to figure out with him. I don't know what to do with him. So we have to do something else. And it's weird to me in a way that you get 11 movies all in the same continuity with Jason Voorhees in Friday the 13th, and granted, he's not in all of those as the main antagonist, but it seems like they had an easier time with it, or maybe they just weren't trying to raise the bar as high, but it's like they did all those movies, they kept the same continuity all the way through, except for the single reboot film, and it was just like, yeah, we'll just have him keep getting out there and doing his thing, but at the same time, his character was never supposed to be pure evil, so maybe they had it at coming from a more human place made it easier to continue the franchise. I know that's wandering all over the place, but I guess, what are your thoughts on that? Is it hard to write a character that's supposed to be pure evil? Does the formula get boring?
I think that the way that you kind of have to write Michael, basically the way that I see the perception of films like the Rob Zombie ones, I think that you can't really go in too much depth of like what Michael is, and or maybe not what Michael is, but why he is the way he is. I think that the best way that you can sort of handle things is by treating it almost like a zombie movie. Like zombie movies, you're not really thinking about the zombies' intentions. The zombies just are. They are unrelenting, unfeeling, and they will never stop. And I think that if you treat Michael Myers like that and just accept that that's the way that he's going to be, then you can focus and make good stories about people that are trying to escape from him. And I think that that's what I like to see, and where the best instances of Michael Myers, the best representations of him, have come in is when he's treated as the zombie, basically, the unrelenting force that you're not necessarily asking why, you're just accepting that it is, and how are we gonna get away from this?
I was just gonna say, I don't think, I mean, maybe it is boring to write the same villain over and over again, but I feel like in a film like Halloween, you're not really tasked with characterizing Michael. He's infamous, we already know that he's an unfeeling killer with no other storyline. You're more characterizing Laurie or any other side character, like Laurie's granddaughter or Corey, for God's sakes. So I don't know. I'm so mad about the. I could literally rave about, or rant, I should say, not rave, rant like a lunatic about the Corey storyline and how it ended.
We're definitely going to get there.
Okay, I know. I'm holding in. I'm holding in my breath.
One thing I was thinking about while you were talking, Matt, is like, as far as like accepting what Michael is and have him be kind of more like a zombie, is one of the things that felt disingenuous about this one is like when Corey comes across him in the sewer and then Michael's like, oh, I'm gonna grab you and strangle you. Oh, just kidding. I guess you're evil too or something. Let's be buddies. Like, I don't know. That just felt so out of character. Why?
Okay, and I want to touch on that. That's a good lead-in, I guess. Maybe not to. Sorry, not to cut you off. Feel free to make your point along with it. But do you think Michael is supernatural in the franchise overall? Do you think he's supposed to be supernatural in David Gordon Green's films? Is he just a man, or is there something supernatural underlying it all?
I think he's just a man with a really high tolerance for pain and a really keen sense of look.
I think that David Gordon Green was trying to get the point across that there's a supernatural element to him, because it was like this evil stare that he passed on to Corey, and the evil strengthens him. And while he was in the sewer, the evil was dormant, basically, kind of a thing. And then the way Halloween Kills finishes up, he has this like boost of supernatural evil. So I do think that he's trying to portray him as supernatural, but I think all the other Halloween films leading up to this were portraying his supernatural power as just like he can take a ton of damage and not die.
It might be that he's trying to portray him as supernatural, and I can see it. I think I'm just pretending, or I'm putting it in my head that it's not, because it's scarier to me that there could be a person in real life that is this persistent about murdering people through the pain. It's scary to me if he's not supernatural. It's just a guy. Yeah, I feel that. He's just a crazy guy.
Yeah. I always, like, I guess through this trilogy and, well, just with his character in general, I always kind of personally liked the idea better that he wasn't supernatural, that he was just a guy. Maybe for that same reason, because it does make him maybe that a bit scarier that way. I feel like as far as the writing and the stories goes, like, in this and others, like, they can never... really decide what to do with him in that front. Even in the first one, they're like, oh well, he's just a man. Oh no, he can take six shots to the chest from Loomis, and then he walks off like I don't know. So I guess it's always feels ambiguous to me. And one of the things I ended up thinking about, and I'm not sure if this is a case for either side, but I thought of Rasputin. And like his death story, and like he got poisoned, and then he got like shot a bunch of times, and then he got like thrown in the river and like all this stuff, and it took a lot to kill him. It's like, well, I guess maybe it's not like, you know, impossible that somebody can take such damage, but it's still hard to believe in some of the scenes. So I don't know, I guess I like it better if he's not, but I think they are trying to say that he is. So, yeah, I guess that was my impression.
I at least wanted to, me and Joe kind of put together a damage report for what kind of damage Michael Myers takes during Halloween and Halloween Kills, all during the course of the same night, and we'll say during about the same 8-hour period. It's already dark by then too, so I guess maybe even a little bit less than that, or maybe a little more. But anyway, what we're dealing with as far as blunt force trauma, he gets a crowbar to the face, he gets hit by a car and knocked out, he gets a cast iron pan to the face twice, sack of bricks to the face twice, He gets stair curb stomped. He gets hit by bats, hockey sticks, and 2x4s at least 15 times. Stab-wise, he gets stabbed in the arm twice, stabbed in the gut 3 times, stabbed in the back with a pitchfork, and then stabbed in the back just with a knife. Your mileage may vary on whether it's like at the spinal cord or not, but it's damn close if it's not. Ranged weapon-wise, he gets shot in the left shoulder, he gets 2 fingers shot off with a shotgun, he gets shot in the side of the neck, maybe side of the head, a little ambiguous there. He gets shot unambiguously in the chest 5 times with what looks to be a .357 handgun. So that is all the damage that we could see he for sure took on screen during that single evening. And still, after all of that, pops up and then murders everybody. So I don't know, at least for me anyway, looking at all of that, maybe it's not extremely supernatural, but I feel like he has to be somewhat supernatural. I think without the use of drugs, I don't know how someone could endure all of that and still be walking around. I mean, I think of like if someone kicked me hard in the back with my current back issues at a decade younger than he's supposed to be during the filming of this, I would be done for. So I don't know.
I've heard of like a, I was going to look up some more information about this, but I didn't get time to, or didn't take the time to, but like, I've heard of some, I don't know if it's a disorder or a mutation or something, but basically you just don't feel pain. And there's a few like cases of that. I remember hearing about one that was like a girl who, she got like hit by a car and then drug I don't know how far for a long ways, and then like just got up afterwards. And I was thinking about that too, and like it's just like so like far out on the fringes of like, well, maybe he has that, maybe he has like endurance like Rasputin or something like that. But like just looking at that list, it feels like he has, like you said, Steve, he has to be at least somewhat supernatural.
And I'm willing to accept that to a degree, because I get it. You know, it's a slasher film. I've seen plenty of slasher films, and I know that you have to have your slasher character be able to endure a lot of damage. That's just how it goes. It's par for the course for the genre. But I feel like, at least for me, David Gordon Green was maybe trying to aim for some semblance of more realism, and then having Laurie's kind of speech about how Michael was evolving over the course of him taking the, you know, the beating from the mob at the end of Halloween Kills and to get back up, I thought we were leading into this idea that he'd evolved into something bigger and that that would be something that we deal with in Halloween Ends. And I suppose maybe by David Gordon Green's money, we did deal with that, because there's this idea of he's pure evil, he's sensing it or passing it on or unlocking it in Corey. I did end up reading some of the novelization, and it was kind of talking more about the idea of like Michael infecting the psyche of multiple people and then becoming more violent because of him. Even like the homeless guy that Corey meets outside the drainage pipe there, maybe being one of those escaped people from the psych ward as well, who basically took it upon himself to be Michael's disciple. So I don't know if maybe the movie was trying to get that concept across and it just fell a little bit flat in the presentation, but yeah. So I don't know. I guess just to reiterate, I think for me, he has to be some degree of supernatural. Maybe it's not a very strong thing. Maybe it'll keep him going for a time period, but obviously he's severely weakened in Halloween Ends. And again, relying at least somewhat on the novelization, it at least goes with the idea that, yeah, he's infected and he's not doing well. His health is terrible. And from taking all that damage, he had enough adrenaline to get away. But after that, he was just almost completely fucked if he didn't have a little bit of help from some random other people like that.
Random other case for maybe supernatural is like, apparently when you turn evil, you don't need glasses anymore if you're Corey, because once he turned evil, he didn't need glasses.
Then we're all very good people, I'm happy to say. Because we're all blind. Do you have glasses, Joe?
No, but I got LASIK. I've had...
Okay, so you
a
count.
A few years ago, I got LASIK. I guess so. Or maybe I turned evil when I got LASIK. I don't know.
Oh.
But when you turn into Spider-Man, you don't need glasses anymore either, so there's that.
Oh, true.
All right. I sense a Venn diagram coming.
All right. I do have some other Michael questions, but you know, we're all itching to talk about it. So let's get into Corey Cunningham a little bit, since he is without a doubt the star of this show. How did you guys first off feel about the relationship between Michael and Corey?
Weird and uncharacteristic for Michael not to kill him.
Absolutely.
Yeah, my thoughts were, why is there a relationship between them?
Yeah.
The only plausible explanation is that he's passing the mantle to Corey, which is what I thought was happening the whole time. And then this man dies. What a waste of a movie. Why would you spend a whole movie setting up and characterizing this future villain and then kill him immediately? Unless they did do that and they're going to say, oh, I stabbed myself, but I didn't die. Surprise.
I don't know. Well, I mean, they double killed him, right? Because he stabs himself in the throat and then Michael like double taps him when he shows up there at the end. So I mean,
true.
Like, at least to me anyway, it feels, I mean, it's not meat grinder dead, but Corey seems pretty damn dead. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. What a waste of time for all of us to watch that. And it leads to nothing. The whole time I'm thinking, this has to be set up for something. Like, we're not doing this for nothing, right? It's related to the future of this series, right? No. Psych!
As it turns out, all right. Not so much.
I'll let someone else speak. I'm just very upset about that.
What did you think of Corey as a character, I guess? Did you enjoy his story? Was it interesting insofar as it was? Obviously, we felt like maybe there was a little bit of a lack of satisfying resolution for the character. But yeah, how did you like Corey?
The more people he killed, I found him more intriguing because it's truly like witnessing the demise of a human person, I guess the downfall of their goodness. I don't know what I'm saying. I don't know. Like, you literally watch him go from being a good and decent person to being a mass murderer, basically. I thought it was an intriguing character, but it was for nothing.
It felt a bit like Anakin Skywalker transitioning to Darth Vader, and I think it had a little bit more depth than what we saw for Anakin Skywalker transitioning to Darth Vader in the films. So if you just purely look at him and his storyline, I do think that he's interesting, and I think that you could, like I said before, I think you could make a film that was just about him and him getting that revenge on the town, sort of. The town is kind of this character in the movie in a way. So him versus the town, and I think his little plot where he's like falling in love, and then, but like Mitch said, there just wasn't really like a payoff to it. So that was kind of the part that annoyed me about his storyline, is that it does feel like they're trying to like pass the mantle of Michael Myers onto him, but then they don't. So,
you know what? Why? You know what I feel most cheated about that is they zoomed in for like 5 seconds on that stupid scarecrow mask. Why would they do that if they were not trying to breadcrumb you? I need to speak to the director.
Mm-hmm. Movie, I'd like to speak to your manager.
Exactly. I would like to speak to...
It's Michael Myers and the Karen haircut this time. Well, and, all right, so you mentioned, too, the love story aspect of the film. between him and Allison. Did that work for you? I mean, because David Gordon Green's talking about that as they wanted to make a love story. So, and that is kind of the core of the film. Did that work for you?
Not for me, largely because of like how short a time it was supposed to. I mean, we're talking about a four day period of time. And in that time, like they, I don't know, it's like a Romeo and Juliet sort of thing, which I find equally ridiculous. But, you know, that just they fall in love so quickly, and then like she's ready to leave town with him, despite like, I don't know, it didn't work for me very well, I guess is the short answer.
Yeah, I didn't. I felt like, I can't really remember what the girl's name is. What's the girl's name?
Allison.
Allison, yeah, it's right there. I felt like they didn't give her much depth. It was just, she saw this guy, thought he was cute, and then she's like super forward and basically willing to accept just about anything from him and still like him. And that was like kind of her side of it. And it felt a little contrived, I think, the love story between the two of them.
Yeah, I 100% agree.
100% too. Yeah. Continue on. Sorry.
That's pretty much it. I was just saying it felt forced because, oh, I'm Laurie Strode's granddaughter. I have to be linked to this other side plot.
And I think that's the thing that maybe bugs me the most about this film is that I rewatched Halloween 2018, and you spend the entire film doing a lot of really good character work with Laurie Strode. You spend a lot of time with her. You feel her pain. I think I came away from that film initially feeling like Jamie Lee Curtis maybe deserved some sort of award for her portrayal in that, because she put a lot into that and you felt it. And Allison, I mean, to a lesser extent, but you do get the character arc with her. You know, she's trying to establish this relationship with her grandmother. She's trying to juxtapose that with trying to understand her mother better, and you really spend all this time with her too. It's not as dramatic as Laurie's arc, but both of them have arcs. Both of them are characters, the main characters, both of them develop. In this movie, they both feel relegated to side characters to Corey's story. If this was the only Halloween movie you watched, you would assume that Allison was a new character that didn't matter. She was the girlfriend in the movie. That's all that she was. And there's more to Laurie than that, but not a lot more. And that's the thing that bugs me going into this final chapter, is taking these two strong main characters and basically making them set dressing in what should have been their own movie. And that feels to me like what gets lost by putting so much focus on Corey here. I don't think that his story is a bad story. I do sympathize with him. I think they go a long way to try and make us sympathize with him. They make a lot of the people that he ends up killing be people that you don't care much about, or that, you know, have it coming in the horror movie sense of the words. And I don't think that any of that is bad. I just feel like Laurie's character and Allison's character really suffer from it, though.
Yeah, absolutely. I don't know. And we've talked about this a lot, and like, I don't know. I'm just going to reiterate a lot of things we've said, I guess. So maybe I won't do that too much, but yeah, it just, Corey should have had his own movie, and it could have been a good movie.
Or as we kind of talked about, just maybe include him from the beginning. I understand that they maybe didn't have the idea for Halloween Kills and Halloween Ends when they were doing Halloween 2018, but it would have felt so much better. We talked about this before, is just Allison and his romance don't really buy. It's 4 days, literally 4 days. If they had had them maybe be the couple that she's in the beginning of Halloween 2018 and have him evolve over the course of 3 movies into this, I feel like I'd feel more invested in that story. It would mean more, and you could maybe give him more development. And then him and Allison being so tight would mean more, because it wouldn't just be we met over 4 days and feel a kinship. It'd be like we survived some shit together. We went through this together and came out the other end together. So yeah, now I'm willing to suffer through some of these strange personality quirks and twists that you're taking, because we just had 4 years and survived death together. So yeah, why wouldn't I be your ride or die, you know?
Yeah, instead of 4 days, we get 4 years of a relationship, and it matters.
Yeah.
I was going to say, I agree with what you were saying there, and it would have made so much more sense if he was there long ago or from the beginning too, because there's this overarching theme in the movie of how you look into the eye of evil, and instead of being scared by it, you become it, kind of a thing. It brings to mind the if people have ever seen Firefly, how they talk about why people would become Reavers. Reavers are like a kind of a space mad people in that film, and people turn into Reavers by seeing the horrible atrocities that Reavers commit. And so that's kind of like a common theme across horror sometimes, is seeing evil and either turning away from it or becoming it. And so it would have made a lot more sense if Corey was around a lot longer from the beginning, and that was how he ended up coping with everything that he'd been through versus Allison. It could have been like a compare and contrast sort of thing. You know, you were the chosen one. You were my brother, Anakin. I mean, Corey. You were and it could have been them turning in opposite directions from it, but they didn't do anything like that.
Yeah, and it's the whole, I always get his name wrong as far as the pronunciation, but Nietzsche quote of, you know, if you gaze into the abyss gazes back into you kind of thing. You know, can you, just like you said, with the Firefly is another example of it. Can you stare into the darkness and come back unchanged from that? And yeah, then it would be more tragic if you had this character who you were with for two movies survive all these things and then finally stare into that abyss and not be able to come back from it, but then Allison to be able to come back from it. Yeah, I feel like it would have meant so much more. I agree.
And like, can you imagine the like it leaving just a little bit of a cliffhanger? Like maybe nobody even finds out what Corey is, but we get a little glimpse of it in Halloween Ends, and it's what you said, Mitz, and it's the birth of a new slasher, and the next movie has nothing to do with Michael. It's this new slasher, Corey, that we've known for three movies at this point in our fictional, you know, trilogy. And I don't know, that'd be such a cool way to go with it.
And then you can keep the whole lore of the Haddonfield with the totally new franchise, but right. What do I know?
I know that I've been making a lot of Star Wars comparisons in this episode, but yeah, it really did feel similar to how like The Force Awakens and The Last Jedi and Rise of Skywalker feel like these really deeply like disconnected, disconjointed kind of I don't know what I'm trying to say there, but they're supposed to be a trilogy, but they're so like not connected together. It almost feels like they just had completely different ideas for each one of the three films, even though it's the same guy that was working on all three of them. You know what I mean? So it just doesn't create an overall cohesive picture. So it wasn't a satisfying ending in that way, because it felt like this third film was something completely different than what they were setting up.
Yeah, I kind of got this sense, and you know, I had us read some of the quotes we did for this reason, but it felt to me like this is the kind of trilogy where that first entry goes for broke without thinking about anything else, and so they knock it out of the park. It does well, you know. It's The Matrix works in a similar way, and then they say to themselves, "Well, we could have a trilogy on our hands." So then it's like your second movie then suddenly has to do a lot of the same heavy lifting as the first movie, establishing why you're still telling the story and why there's still stakes, and then finishing it out with the third movie. So you end up with this series that's basically like a standalone movie and then a double feature movie that's one movie split into two films. And it's weird to say that about this David Gordon Green trilogy, where you've got Halloween and Halloween Kills that take place on the same night, But in a way, Halloween Kills fits more with maybe what Halloween Ends was, at least for me anyway. I know what you're saying is Halloween Ends sort of stands on its own apart from the other two. And I guess there is that way to interpret it too. But it's kind of like Halloween Kills is sort of like, well, we're bringing it back, so we have to figure out why it's back. But then they do the same thing that Halloween Ends does, which is basically you came, you bought the ticket to see Laurie and Michael duke it out. And you don't for the entirety of Halloween Kills and almost for the entirety of Halloween Ends, you know?
I do know.
I thought you knew. I thought you might. We're jumping a little bit all over my notes, but to jump back into it, I knew that, you know, obviously Corey's the elephant in the room with all of this. But I wanted to see, how did you feel about the portrayal of Michael in this film? How did it compare to the other films in this series or the other films in this trilogy? Did you like it? Did you not like it?
Once Michael was being Michael again, I was satisfied with it. But like for a lot of the movie, we get this like, I don't know, trying to take on an apprentice or whatever he's doing with Corey that feels so off for his character. We've already talked about that. But and then just like him shuffling around in the sewers, like, I don't know, I didn't care for that very much. It didn't feel like Michael for a lot of it until closer to the end.
I second everything he said.
Yeah, I would agree with all of that too. Yeah, and then I guess it's just more with the possible supernatural angle, because if you want to go with he was weakened after that fight, had his adrenaline rush, did his part, and then was basically just languishing and not able to do much, because obviously he's weakened when we first see him. But then him becoming stronger as he kind of kills again, I guess, sort of thing. It's a little bit like, okay, again, another argument for the supernatural. If he's able to fight again because he's, I don't know, Corey's helping him, he's channeling some of that energy or receiving some of that energy as Corey kills to be able to get up and running again. But yeah, once he is up and running, it does feel like Michael again.
It does feel weird, though, that he has this, like, burst in at the end of Halloween Kills and isn't able to escape that sort of thing. And then, yeah, Laurie just, like, dumps a fridge on him and is able to slit his wrists and kill him there. Considering all the damage he's taken before that moment, it does definitely feel
right.
Really weird and not consistent.
Did you like the death scene? Do you think it was a fitting end? Was that final fight satisfying?
I don't think Allison should have been anywhere near it. I think it should have been Laurie and Michael, the end. And they both.
Yeah, I kind of wanted it to be like in Deathly Hallows when Harry hugs Voldemort and they fall off the off of Hogwarts. And Laurie just hugs Michael and she's like, it's me and you, Michael. And then they jump off of a building together.
I mean, it worked for the series finale of Hannibal, so.
Oh, I mean, I did feel like it was a good fight scene and like it was interesting. I felt like it was another one. It was a little bit also like Laurie like getting back to being Laurie a little bit, like back to her Halloween 2018 badass self, at least for a minute there. But like we mentioned, it's like, well, okay, why would this kill him? He took 5 shots from a 357 at point blank range, like, and you're telling me that him getting a few cuts is more deadly than that? I don't understand.
Well, all right, and you're talking about Laurie being up in fighting form, so I guess let's talk about that. How did you feel about the portrayal of Laurie in this film?
Similarly to my thoughts on Michael, once Laurie was being Laurie, then I liked it.
It's kind of interesting. It felt like they turned her into Halloween H20 Laurie for a little bit. It was like that same kind of vibe. But I felt like it took away some of the nuance of her character because, yeah, it was. I think you have a note here. Laurie's mental health didn't feel earned, and I think that's kind of spot on. There, that it definitely it feels contrive that she's just healed from this in 4 years, even though with the way that Halloween Kills ends, it doesn't feel like she would be healed from this in 4 years and be like so well adjusted and living her life in this cute little New England home now. It just felt kind of New England style looking home, not New England. But yeah, it just felt, yeah, didn't feel like actual Laurie. That's why I said earlier, like, this version of Laurie and this version of Michael, because these versions of Laurie and Michael don't feel like the Laurie and Michael from the original or from 2018.
I really don't mind the way they portrayed Laurie here. She seemed the most believable to me. I know that 4 years to recover that much seems kind of short, but I don't know. I'm willing to buy it. So Laurie didn't really bother me, because there were moments where her anxiety still came out, like when she was trying to, you know, help Allison, freaking out at Allison for going with Corey. I think her anxiety still kind of went out, but yeah, it didn't bother me.
I guess for me, looking at it, and I heard someone else put it this way, so I'm kind of borrowing a thought, but I think it rings true, is we saw her in Halloween 2018. This was 40 years since the original attack, all while Michael was incarcerated, likely with him never to escape so far as she was aware, and how she reacted to it was building this trap house, getting good with firearms, getting good at hand-to-hand combat, all in preparation for this single moment. And now here we are just 4 years later, and Michael is out there, so far as everyone is aware, alive, at large, still out there, now having killed her daughter. And I just felt like if you want to establish that she has been able to move on and that she's trying, honestly, I understand, desperately to have some sort of normal life, try to grasp some sort of normal life, I feel like you need to do a little more show and a little less tell. Having it just pop up and be like, here's what we've gone through, here's how we got here, now dropping you into the story. It just didn't work for me. It didn't feel right. As I said, you know, I've got in the notes there, Matt Redham, it didn't feel earned to me. I hate to lean back on the novelization, but it was written by one of the guys that wrote this movie, so I think that at least for that one, he delved a lot more into the background of what was going on, what happened during those 4 years. Laurie hitting some of her absolute lowest points is basically like being even far worse off than we saw her in Halloween 2018, of just basically doing nothing but hunting Michael. And I understand that that might have felt like a retread, but I kind of felt like we should have seen that, that we should have spent time seeing that so that it can go back to Laurie's mental state, so that when she does get to a place where she's good, it feels satisfying for us as the audience. And because we spent so much time with Corey, which is weird because I do like Corey's character and I would have liked to have seen more done with him, but I just feel like Laurie needed more time to breathe in that film so that we could understand her journey and feel satisfied by it at the end. And we just didn't get there for me.
Nothing to add but agreement. Yeah, I agree with all that.
I think we've kind of gone around some of these, and we're at nearly an hour and a half here, so I don't want to like belabor the point too much, but I guess I wanted to at least touch on if anyone had anything they wanted to say about Allison's portrayal in this film. I think we kind of touched on it with Corey's love story angle of it, but I guess if anyone had anything to add on her front.
I just find her boring. That's it.
Boring in just this film or boring in general?
I can't really remember her very much from the other two, so obviously she wasn't that memorable, but I remember at least being more connected with her during the scenes where her whole family's being attacked at the same time in 2018. This one, I don't know. I feel like I just don't feel like I care of whether she lives or dies, so.
I wanted her to be a cooler character. I wanted to care about her, but yeah, I guess at the end of the day, that's kind of where I ended up with it. and just some of the choices she was making and just the way they had her react to things, and it just ended up not being very connected with her.
And then talking about the film overall, what would you say were your favorite moments and your least favorite moments of the film?
I literally laughed out loud in the theater when Laurie sees Corey skulking by the bush, like homage to the original film. I was just like, that was hilarious.
He did, I can confirm. He was the only one who laughed, so it was very noticeable.
Yeah, I don't know why that was so funny to me, but I don't think that it was supposed to be funny to me. And yeah, I think that that's very telling about the direction of the film, that moment where they're trying to like pay homage to the original, that it just makes me laugh.
Yeah, and it was weird.
That's all.
I did.
Sorry, I'm done.
No, you're good. You're good. I did like the moments when Laurie and Michael do fight, and I think the kitchen fight scene is interesting. But there were some I liked some of the things and some of the directions there were hinting at with Corey, but as we've already talked plenty about, it just didn't pay off. So I don't know if I have other specific favorites.
I guess I would say my favorite part would be when Laurie stabs Michael with the needle, the knitting needle, because it's classic.
Yeah. I, of course, really enjoyed the Laurie and Michael fight, but I guess the other thing I'll put my money towards is I actually really liked the opening babysitting scene with Corey. I thought that was good tension builder. The scene was constructed well. I liked the little reference to the original, like the double reference, really, like quadruple reference almost, of referencing the babysitter watching The Thing, but now it's John Carpenter's The Thing instead of the original one. So you get the reference to Carpenter, you get the reference to the first movie. All of that was great. The tension built well. And then just that final moment, like I wasn't expecting the kid to do a header off the balcony and die.
Oh my God.
And then I was expecting Michael to maybe be involved somewhere. So I feel like that was a well-constructed scene all the way around. That felt good.
Yeah. It was definitely a jump scare when he hit the floor.
You could tell by the theater reaction for that. I didn't watch it on Peacock. I watched it in the theater with Miss, and you could tell by the theater reaction that was one of like the high points of the movie, for sure. That everybody's like, "Holy crap!"
All right, I have a couple sort of finishing off the episode questions involving Halloween. Before we get there, though, is there anything else anybody really wanted to mention about this particular film, Halloween Ends?
I don't know if I had anything else really specific. I think we covered everything, all of my thoughts on it.
Okay, here are my wrap-up questions. So first off, I know that not everyone here has seen all of the Halloween films, but if your favorite film is the first Halloween, of course, say so. But what is your favorite film outside of the first Halloween?
For me, it's easily Halloween 2018. I really like the original, but definitely 2018 is right there alongside it. I don't know if I'd even put one over the other, really.
Yeah, I think Halloween 2018 is my favorite Halloween film outside of the first movie, with maybe Halloween 2 being my third favorite.
Same, Halloween 2018, but that's only because I've only seen this timeline. I haven't seen the other timelines, and I have a feeling if I watched Halloween 2, I would like it more.
I think it's same for me. I think for years, I viewed my chosen sort of timeline was 1, 2, and H2O. And I used to really like H2O, but it's one of those films that's worn a little bit worse for me as time has gone on, because it feels a little bit too Scream clone-y, even though Jamie Lee Curtis's portrayal in there really works for me. So at least for me, the original Halloween's obviously the favorite, but Halloween 2018 is definitely the second favorite. So whatever this trilogy of films by David Gordon Green ended up becoming, it at least produced my next favorite Halloween film. So there's that. And then for anybody who has seen films in the other timeline, is this your preferred timeline? Is there another timeline you think you like better?
I haven't personally seen enough of the others to have an alternate timeline that I like better. This one of the four movies, I really like two of them, so I guess that's a 50-50, so I guess that's all right.
And Matt, had you seen a few more of the rest of these, or I can't remember exactly how many you had seen?
I've seen Halloween 2. I've seen Halloween H20. I saw Halloween Resurrection. And I saw both of the Rob Zombie Halloween movies.
Which timeline overall would you say is your favorite then?
I mean, I guess I would have to say that the H20 timeline would be my favorite overall, because I like that it kind of pulls things all together. But I do like, if you exclude Kills and Ends and just have Halloween, the original, and Halloween 2018, I think those are definitely my two favorite Halloween movies. There's something about Laurie lopping off Michael's head with an axe that was still endearing in H20, right?
And if you never watch Resurrection, you get to leave it there and pretend that's how it ended.
Yeah.
I think overall I gotta go with the David Gordon Green film timeline is my favorite overall, just because it does have my two favorite Halloween movies, and it's has the benefit of being the only timeline that knew it was ending when they made their last film. So there is definitely a feeling of finality at the end of Halloween Ends. Whether you enjoy the whole ride or not, it feels like it's over when that's finished. And you do get that with H2O, but the knowledge, just the simple sort of completionist knowledge for me that there is another film out there that's supposed to continue the story, sort of aggravates me from keeping it feeling exactly like closure. So that definitely would have been my next favorite timeline before all of this. I do enjoy Halloween 3 Season of the Witch, though. I think that's one that a lot of people have reevaluated. I know it doesn't have Michael Myers in it, but it does have Tom Atkins, and that's awesome. So there's that. All right, and then the final question that I have involving all of this Halloweeniness is, where do you feel like the franchise should go next?
You already know my answer. It's not going to happen, so... That's it.
You wanted the Corey movie.
I wanted the Corey killer. Michael's dead. What can we... We can't bring... We can't... We cannot put together his meat pieces anymore. It's done. Meat we gotta man. Go somewhere else.
Yeah, where I want the series to go is the fictional story that we came up with tonight about... about Corey continuing or becoming a totally new slasher, but still have the Haddonfield background, but we won't get it.
Here's my idea for the next Halloween film. Okay. So Michael Myers bits. Okay. They got ground up at a junkyard. Okay. So his bits get ground up and forged into metal ingots. Okay, those ingots are used to build a satellite. The satellite gets fired into space, explodes over the atmosphere, bits of Michael Myers rain down over the entire world and infect random people with evil, and it basically turns into the Purge, and everybody turns into little Michael Myers.
So it's a zombie movie.
No, they turn into little Michael Myerses, not zombies, obviously. So, excuse not me. A zombie movie. Thank you.
bits of Michael.
Yeah. It's kind of like a little bit Scientology, a little bit like bits of Xenu. Instead, it's bits of Michael.
Yes, bits of Michael.
And you have to pay your movie entry to have the bits of Michael purge from you.
All right, here are my two continuation of the franchise pitches. First is a simple one. Let's skip Michael Myers. Let's do a direct sequel to Halloween 3 Season of the Witch. So we can do all that. It can even take place in the same universe. I know that I think I'm the only one on the podcast right now who's seen it, but they have this whole thing where there are these masks that are made by the Shamrock Company. I forget, the Silver Shamrock. And they have those masks show up. The skull mask, the witch mask, and the pumpkin mask. They have them show up a couple times throughout David Gordon Green's franchise. So you can do a requel where the next movie could even still take place in this universe if you want, or you can just have a direct sequel to 3, and you can see what they're up to now, what nefarious things they're up to now, and then have that story. I think that would be interesting. The other way I would go with it is, since we're just like, the franchise is cherry picking which movies it wants to use and doesn't want to use anyway, let's do Halloween H3O, and what it'll do, hear me out, is Curse of Michael Myers wasn't that great. It's a 3-series, the Thorn trilogy of Halloween 4, Halloween 5, Halloween 6, where he's coming after Jamie, Laurie Strode's daughter. And so let's go ahead and we'll wipe out 6. Curse of Michael Myers didn't happen. We'll go 30 years after Halloween 5, which would be in 29. So it'd be 2029, you release it. And you bring back Danielle Harris, and you do the same thing as, like, she's an adult now, and that Michael Myers is still out there, and we'll have a more satisfying Curse of the Thorn resolution. So that's my other weird pitch. If we're going to cherry pick films, let's go ahead and cherry pick different films. And 2 different ways we can go, one involving Michael, one not, that don't have to involve Jamie Lee Curtis at all.
Make it happen.
You hear me, whoever?
I think the bits of Michael Myers one was the better. Who had that one?
Or that one. Or we could do that one. All right. Any other closing thoughts before we bring it to a close here?
Nah.
All right. Well, thank you for joining us for another episode of Is It Horrible? This is our Is It Horrible edition. Maybe we'll brand it that way. Maybe we won't. I just think it's funny. Anyhow. But yeah, thanks for joining us as we talked about Halloween Ends and kind of review all of that. In 2 weeks, we will be releasing our next episode covering Willow, the original Willow, in just in time for the TV series to be released. I actually haven't seen Willow before. It's one of the few times I haven't seen one of the movies we're talking about. So I'm excited to finally do that. And we'll decide if we think it is horror. So join us back then in 2 weeks. Hopefully Brianna will be back with us then as well. I have been Steve.
I'm Joe.
I'm Matt.
And I am Mitz.
Bye 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 bye.
Evil dies tonight.
Thanks for joining us at Is It Horror? We post new episodes every other Friday. Think we didn't give this movie a fair shake? Think we missed something? Do you have a suggestion for future episodes, or did you just want to say hi? If so, you can follow us on Twitter or Instagram at isithorrorpod, or you can email us at isithorrorpodcast@gmail.com. In the meantime, stay safe and keep asking yourself,
Is It Horror?